He seemed an unlikely sort for a baron, their host, this Don Tenorio. He was a small, dark man, clearly on the downward slope of middle age, spare, graying, in fact perhaps a bit gray overall. His features were spare, his mouth a slit, his nose a great beak, in general betraying more than slight relationship to the human Chichimecs the companions had encountered. He seemed not just to lack, but to be the antithesis to the sort of flamboyance, the larger-than-life swagger that characterized the Deathlands barons they had encountered, the good, at least, comparatively, as well as the bad. He seemed more suited to be a clerk, a shopkeeper, a bureaucratic mouse, not big or imposing enough even to be a rat. But as they sat at his table and ate his food and drank his wine, both copious and fine, Rhine began to perceive him in a different light. Nor was it simply the light of the candles Don Tenorio used to light his dining hall. A trick, Rhine gathered, like the heavy wooden furniture and blankets patterned in muted but multiple colors hung from the walls, to transform the sterile chamber in a reclaimed skyscraper, smelling inescapably of moisture and mildew, and in the occupant's subconscious, if not actual fact, of ancient death, into something approximating a hall in some fine adobe villa built on dry and solid ground. As Don Tenorio spoke, the alcalde's skin seemed to take on an almost transparent quality, and his eyes to burn, as though they were thin membrane and dark lenses showing forth the light of the spirit and vision that burned inside. Jack was frowning. He nodded out the window.
Why that much water?
An excellent question. Mexico City was built upon a lake. Its predecessor, Tenochtitlan of the fierce and terrible Aztecs, itself lay in the midst of Lake Texcoco. In time, Texcoco was virtually covered over, paved over by Mexico City, as were several other substantial lakes nearby. With the continuing powerful quakes, the waters rose, or the land sank, or perhaps both. Indeed, so it happened throughout this great catchment basin that we by tradition miscall a valley, which in fact has no outlets for water so that no rivers flow out of it. Heights were cast down, others thrust up. The normal work of millions of years of geological formation occurred in short years, in some cases weeks. We believe it was the single most violent seismic upheaval, not in written history, but in the whole history of the human species. The whole land was transformed, so that when the people emerged from caves and shelters after the skies cleared and the nuclear winter ended, it was as if we had been transported to another realm. As I have indicated, not all the consequences of the disaster were bad. The valley, which had long been blessed with greater rainfall than the desert lands to the north, began to receive even more than before. And for the most part, our rains were pure, not the acid rains and chem storms that have so ravaged your own homeland, and indeed, much of the northern reaches of our country. This weather pattern has persisted. We receive abundant water for irrigation. In the days of the Aztec, the waters of Lake Texcoco were brackish with salts carried down from the mountains. Nowadays, the waters of the lake, which we also call Texcoco, are fresh, fit for irrigation, or suitably sterilized for human consumption. Even the volcanic ash falls are a blessing as well as a curse. They create rich growing soils, causing the very lands they smother to spring back more fruitful than before. So our valley has been a relative haven in our tormented world. While the tremors and eruptions continue to take a toll, they have also helped to isolate us from our hostile outside world.
Yet you seem to be seeking contact with that world. Welcoming us, for instance, not to put too fine an edge on it.
I believe the benefits inherent in peaceful trade outweigh the risks from such contact. As you have observed, and as I have hinted at, we are not without means of defending ourselves.
And cooperation with Don Hector has been part of those means of self-defense?
Most perceptive, Señor Calder. We re-entered the long-dead city in the lake a generation ago. At the time, that was all the safety we required. Most residents of the valley believed the ruins were cursed, that it was death so much as to set foot among them, which was why the wealth present here remained totally untouched for the better part of a century. For years, it was true enough, what with the plagues. But eventually the spores, or whatever carried the contagion, died out and lost their potency. Or perhaps the only humans to survive to our time were genetically immune to the plagues.
If I might be so bold as to make an inquiry, Don Tenorio, how does it happen that you and certain other folk we have encountered speak English, especially so fluent and excellent a form as you yourself display?
Ah, but you flatter me, Doctor. As you may be aware, for a long time we Mexicans had a love-hate relationship with our neighbors to the north. Yet by your day, right before the war, English had indisputably become the international language. So, learning that language had become institutionalized here. It continued to be taught even through the Great Skye Dark. Its knowledge has come to be associated with greater education, and hence with greater status, with class, if you like. Which is why Don Hector, who is in many ways a virulent traditionalist, encourages elite, his priests and Eagle Knights, to learn it, to differentiate them from the commoners. Ah, but it grows late, and doubtless you are fatigued from your ordeal. I will not torment you with further questions. I hope you rest well, though, for there remains a world of things I wish to ask you of.
I shall see you gentlemen in the morning. In the meantime, I am off to the chambers our host has graciously provided, there to renew my long-standing acquaintance with Mr. Jack Daniels.
The tall, gaunt man hoisted his salvaged bottle to his companions.
Night, Doc. Sweet dreams.
Ah, John Barrymore. But for one such as myself, the sweetest dreams are no dreams at all.
He went into the building, leaving his companions leaning on the terrace rail and shaking their heads.
Hey, where's Jack?
Some sweet little senorita snagged him, is my guess. They seem to think he's what they call muy bonito. Red eyes and all.
JB took a swig from his own bottle.
Ah, youth. It's wasted on the young. Me, I gotta admit, I'm glad Millie's even more tired than I am. It's about all I'm gonna be able to do to totter all the way to my bed before I pass out. I'm beat.
The terrace they stood on had once been a restaurant overlooking the street from several stories up. The slowly heaving night-black water now came almost to their feet. It was a peaceful night, quiet but for the sporadic cries of some unknown night bird, or night something, and the distant grumble of the volcanoes, punctuated by explosions that sounded like a giant's knuckles knocking on wood far away. The armorer held up his bottle and admired the way the dark liquid within caught the starlight as he swirled on.
Lafroig single malt, as I live and breathe. I tell you, Ryan, I'll eat and drink damn near anything that I can get my hands on. But that doesn't mean I don't appreciate the best when I run across it.
Cow steak's better than wolf steak any day. You said a true thing there.
Ryan leaned on crossed arms. He had stopped his own drinking of anything but purified lake water early in the meal. He wanted to keep his head clear.
So, what do you think of our host?
Don Tenorio? Seems a nice enough old codger. Maybe too nice to be a baron.
Not too nice to ply us with alcohol on empty stomachs, I noticed.
Yeah, but that's just boilerplate. Trader would have done it too, just to feel out somebody he didn't know and was none too sure of. What's that line Doc's always quoting? In Weenie Warthog or something?
In Wino Veritas.
There you go.
I do wonder how Don Tenorio's gonna want to be paid for all this lavish hospitality.
We have novelty value right now. He seems to have a curiosity. And since he's had visitors from up north before, not all of them friendly, it's of real value to him to get what news he can.
Yeah, right now. But pretty soon we'll be old news. I got a feeling this baron has something more in mind.
Maybe. All I can say is he seems legitimately friendly enough right now. And we can all use the rest, not just Christy.
The moon was rising like a giant luminous bubble squeezing up from the lake. JB saluted it with his bottle.
And speaking of which, I believe I'll take me to my room and let you get along to her.
He started away, stopped, and then turned back.
Oh, just remembered. I want to ask Doc what all that business was about that Walker fella.
I already did. Back in Doc's time, a little before, actually, he led a party down to a place in Central America, way south of here. They aimed to take over.
How'd that turn out?
He went to the wall eventually.
Figures. Another dude just had to be Baron, and all it got him was the chop.
The window was open in the dark infirmary. That surprised Ryan. In most of the big buildings in these old dead cities, you couldn't open the windows. The breeze was fresh and cool and smelled of the water, and only a tiny tang of sulfur from the endless eruptions. The moonlight came gushing in the window and splashed over Christy, where she lay asleep in the bed, among white sheets for one of the few times in her life. They did all right for themselves here, the Baron and his colony of scabbies. Christy looked pale even for her, her skin almost greenish in the moonlight. Still, her breathing was regular, her mouth was open, and she snored gently. And her cheek, when he touched it with the back of his hand, gently, so as not to rouse her, seemed cooler to him. Taking off his long coat, he shook it out and spread it on the linoleum floor beside her bed. He pulled his Sig Sauer, pulled back the slide far enough to confirm it was loaded by the dull gleam of brass in the moonlight. Then he eased the slide shut again. They were in the proverbial position in which, should the Baron have wished them harm, he could have done it to them at any time. But it went against Ryan's grain, and long years of hard lessons in the company of Trader, tough and survival-wise as an old gray rat, to take security for granted. A Baron's son himself, and exiled through the treachery of his own kin, he knew how fickle a Baron's mercy and hospitality might be. And while this Baron seemed almost unnaturally easygoing, even benign, that didn't exactly lull Ryan into complacency. Was this Don Tenorio really hard-assed enough to take the measures necessary to protect himself, far less his current honored guests, from hostile outsiders, who didn't seem in short supply in the valley? Or insiders, for that matter. As yet, the travelers had no real skinny on the internal politics of Don Tenorio's sunkenville. He would sleep well, but he'd keep his blaster near to hand. He used the decocker to ease the hammer down on the chambered round, ready to be cocked again at the squeeze of the trigger, and slipped on the safety. He set the weapon on the floor beside Christie's bed. He bent over and kissed her forehead. Then he laid himself down on his coat and fell instantly asleep.